we're both dealing with offline issues today, so we haven't talked about what we want to talk about on this show.
Well, I thought that was going to be the A-blocker show.
We'll just be spitballing topics for the next 10 minutes. I think it's a smart plan.
I mean, it's what we do anyway, isn't it?
I think it's good. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't really deviate from our normal approach, so, you know, it's helpful. Yeah. Hey, welcome into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And your my and our Colorado Rockies, winners of 11 of their last 12 at home.
What?
Sort of sandwiched around a 2-4 road trip. Wasn't great. Wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's they're 5-1 against the Padres this year, which I hope they go 17-1 against the Padres this year, because the one game that the Padres won, evidently their fans were just complete butts in the mentions of at Rockies. Although, to be fair, at Rockies has been a butt to us this year. But I want them to beat the pants off the Padres for the rest of the season.
I mean, well, we've said this many times, that the Padres fans are the most surprisingly dickish fans that we've ever come across.
It makes no sense.
For a team that has accomplished literally nothing in their entire
existence. A team that has never won a World Series. They've never thrown a no-hitter, correct?
Correct. Only team.
It's, you know, even the Rockies have done that. Even the Rockies have been to a World Series this millennium.
Even the Rockies threw a no-hitter once.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm not feeling too bummed about the Padres. I also, there was a Padres roster move earlier this week that seemed strange. If you, I guess, had tuned out baseball after like April, remember Chris Paddock at the beginning of the year when everybody was like,
the
sheriff, he comes to his starts in a cowboy hat and snakeskin boots and he dominates everybody. He just got optioned to high A the other day.
Yeah, as a paper as they say.
A paper move slash perhaps Super 2 thing slash, you know, whatever.
Keep his innings down. Yeah.
But, that was a little interesting.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, everyone's like, oh, the Padres, like, they're playing so well. They're going to challenge the Dodgers here. It's like, well, no, they're not, because it's like, oh, they're such great young pitching. It's like, yeah, they have great young pitching who they are not going to be let pitch in September. Yeah. Like, I mean, they're going to hit their limits. Paddock's a Tommy John guy anyway. He was not going to hit it. Nick Margavichus had barely pitched above high A ball before the season, if at all, I think,
same
actually.
Same with Paddock.
Yeah, and same with Paddock. So, or like with a couple of starts in double A, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, listen, those guys were not going to come up right now and set the world on fire. Next year, yeah, the Padres could be very, very good. This year, they're not going to be that team. They're going to be hovering around 500, which for them has to be a win. It's better than winning 67 games like they've done every other year.
Yeah. Paddock, by the way, had given up. Over his last three starts, he had given up 12 runs and 14 and a third. So it was like struggling a little bit, but
he's a two-pitch pitcher. He's a fastball changeup guy.
Beginning of the season, everybody was like, oh, he's a rookie of the year candidate. And it's like, it's April 6th.
And when he throws his curveball, he telegraphs his curveball, so he's a two-pitch pitcher. The two pitches are good, but he's a two-pitch pitcher. He's a fastball changeup.
You need a little bit more than that at the major league level. So welcome into your favorite San Diego Padres podcast. No, we're going to be talking about
just like that one that like tried to punk us for like Jeff Hoffman's rank on like some baseball prospectus, like prospect list.
What?
Because it was worse than Anderson Espinosa's.
I didn't even see this.
The Padres podcast that was super dickish to us for no reason. No, this was like years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then it was after we went on there.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
How random. Anderson Espinosa, that's a guy who just has not worked out for them. I mean, to be fair, he was injured at Tommy John, but where is he now in there? He has dropped way back.
He's out for the year, isn't he? Again?
Yeah, I think
again,
so.
Out for the year?
He was their like number three prospect at one time. Second Tommy John surgery for him.
There you go.
Underwent that in April. Good God. That is rough. I feel like the Padres should be one of those teams that is just like, we're kind of buddies. I feel like they should be like the Mariners, where it's like, we're kind of buddies with them. Like, we're normally in the cellar. They're normally in the cellar.
No, honestly, like, it really should be. Like, they should not be that kind of, like, assholishness at all.
Exactly. They are just not. Rockies knocked them off yesterday. That was a fun one. And I was coming off of a series against, you know, the Chicago Cubs, in which, this is kind of interesting, had the Rockies won that series finale and swept that series, Through 204 all-time meetings with the Cubs, the Rockies would have been 102 and 102. They lost it, so they're now 101 and 103. But isn't that incredible? Over 26 seasons now, that 27 seasons that the Rockies would be split 500 with the Cubs. How random.
That's wild. Yeah.
Very weird. Weird, wild stuff. Yesterday, a 9-6 win for the Rockies over the San Diego Padres. John Gray, a rough first inning. He ended up giving up four runs over six.
Rough first inning. It was one bad, one hard hit, and then a bunch of, like, derps.
It was a very John, I should say, yeah, very it was John a very Gray John Gray first inning, in which he just continues to get screwed by fate for some reason. But his offense immediately bounced back to put him on the right side of history. Two runs for the Padres in the top of the first. Rockies got three in the bottom of the first and two more in the second. Big day for Chuck, who was 4-for-5 with a triple, two homers, and four runs batted in. The Rockies right now have a dude who should definitely be an all-star in David Dahl, and who is, like, barely even registering a pulse in all-star balloting. And I feel like Chuck's kind of making a push too. Neither one of those guys will end up starting.
No, but Chuck is, I mean, Chuck was on the list because he's a guy that people know.
Right.
He's been the All-Star game a few times. Yeah. They know who he is. And so he was on, like, the top six or nine or whatever for a while because, you know, that's just kind of who they think he is because he's been that guy in the past. But now he's actually playing like that guy again.
Yeah, which has been very good to see. And it really started with the walk-off homer over the Phillies.
Right.
To beat the Phillies back in the end of April. My God, I have a mail slot at my house, which is in my kitchen. And when they come to give me mail, it's one of those ones that, like, pushes into the house.
Right.
It is the most terrifying sound on earth because I've never lived in a house that had a mail slot in the house. And so when they open up the thing and then they start pushing the mail,
and it's like
all this jangling and then something falling down in the kitchen. I'm like, what is that?
We have the same thing at our house, the exact same thing. So
I've been living here for almost
a year.
I got
you, buddy. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
It was April 19th. It was a Friday night against the Phillies. And in 34 games since, Charlie Blackmon is hitting 365, 420, 791 for a 12-10 OPS, 14 home runs, 35 runs batted in, and 29 extra base hits.
Sweet.
Well, 30 extra base hits. Mary. 30. Even 30.
What was he hitting going into that game?
Going into that game?
It was not pretty. It was not a good start. And we talked repeatedly about how Chuck looked old and maybe not even healthy.
That was when we got
which was
raked over the coals by At Rockies.
Right, for no reason, because
at the time he was hitting 221, 274, 299 for a 573 OPS, home runs, and five extra base hits through his first 18 games.
And At Rockies dragged us for thinking that those were not good numbers. But nevertheless, it's been very good to see his bounce back. Yesterday, the two homers were not cheap ones. They went to center field and triples, drives in four.
Myers had some nice routes to those.
What's going on? Yesterday, to be fair to Will 1L Myers, there were a lot of weird things with, I don't know if it was the sky. I don't know if those LED lights are way different for guys to play under.
You were saying that the lights or something was off with the lights last night? I couldn't tell.
I heard Don Orsillo and Mark Grant say something about how the sky was weird. Mark Grant was like, I think the sky is playing tricks with guys because Ryan McMahon almost lost it. Well, he did lose a pop-up for a second. He ended up making the catch. But there were a few different things where it was just like, what is going on out there? It was strange. I was okay with it.
I mean, whatever.
Because it ended up working out okay for the Rockies. But, Manny Machado hits two homers in a losing effort. I'm fine with that. Manny Machado is also hitting 247 this year. With, you know, he's doing some good. He's doing good. He's OPSing 818. Good. Like, he's, you know, he's no, he's OPSing 758. Sorry. Yeah. Like, he's been, I don't know, fine. Probably not $300 million fine, but neither is Bryce Harper. That's all good. The Rockies are now even with the Arizona Diamondbacks in win percentage, Rockies are 36-32, the D-backs are 37-33, each team 9.5 back of the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have 6 more wins than anybody else in the National League. And they are tied with the Houston Astros
yeah.
for the most wins in baseball. The second most wins in baseball belong to the Minnesota Twins, who are 45-22.
Best record in baseball, Minnesota huh? Twins.
What? Huh?
It's amazing when a team when a team tries to win.
It's incredible, you know? The things that happen.
Yeah.
Who knew? I'm honestly sad that Joe Mauer is not around for this.
Twins fans aren't.
I mean, he's not dead.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But like Joe Mauer was like the Joey Votto of the American League, where Twins fans just like crapped all over him for his entire career, and it's like he's been pretty good. Actually.
He's like really good and stuff.
Like a really good, like a borderline Hall of Fame player. Like, I don't know what your problem is with him. Yeah, I really wish that the Reds front office would have hated Joey Votto the way Reds fans do, and the Rockies could have like swung a deal for him somehow over the last 5 years, but that didn't happen. I think one thing that we should discuss over the last 2 nights, 2 teams that had never won championships won championships. And back in February, had their boy wonder head coach not gotten his face shoved into the mud by a smarter coach on the other side, there could have been a third team in the first 3 major championships awarded in 2019 to have won their first ever title. The Los Angeles Rams failed, but the Toronto Raptors and the St. Louis Blues ended up winning championships, did it on the road in Boston and at Golden State, which was real fun. The Rockies are one of only 7 teams to have never won a World Series. Just saying. We know the Washington Nationals aren't going to do it.
No, absolutely not.
We know the Texas Rangers aren't going to do it, although they're sort of hanging in right now.
Brewers have a shot.
Brewers have a shot. Padres, yeah. No.
No.
Now I don't even remember who the other ones were. But yeah,
Mariners.
It's the Mariners, the Rays.
Yeah. The Rays have the best shot of anybody.
Right now, that team is a half game back of the Yankees. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, the Rays, they're really going to make a run at that wild card. That team is really good.
It's the best pitching staff in baseball, and it's not close, really.
Did you see the pitching ninja Rob Friedman, his gif of Chaz Rose slider the other day? Former Rockies draft pick.
All
Chaz
these
Rose.
Guys. That's
where
the worst
do these
part.
Guys get this stuff?
That is the worst part about like all these guys that have left the Rockies and yeah. become like amazing somewhere else. Like Chaz Rowe was like the Rockies were not wrong to release.
No, Chaz Rowe was like, terrible. He was terrible. He actually never even made it to the big leagues with the Rockies.
And you see him pitch now. He's got like a slider that breaks 9 feet. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, where did that come from? Chaz Rowe basically had one good season in the Rockies system. It was 2009 with Double A Tulsa. He went 7-3 with a 3.15 ERA. But even that year, he struck out 77 and walked 43 in 117 innings. This season, Chaz Rowe, over the course of 20 and a third innings, has 27 strikeouts. He also has 19 walks. But still, he's got a 3.98 ERA. He's got ridiculous stuff. And he's just one of the guys in that bullpen that you're just like, where did you come from?
I mean, any of those guys, like Jose Alvarado, Diego Castillo,
terrible.
Like all those guys, like we're not like heralded guys, you know?
So it's quite interesting. But the Rockies, you know, I'm just saying, are one of those teams. This weekend, I feel like, is going to tell us a decent amount about how the race stacks up for the rest of the season. Obviously, the early season matchups with the Dodgers did not go well for the Rockies. But right now, you kind of look at where they are. They have played pretty well in the division as of late. They swept the D-backs in a 4-game series, obviously, a couple of weeks ago at the homestand. They played really well against the Padres so far this season. The Giants, I feel like they've barely seen. They had
good.
A split in that series in early May because one of those games was postponed. They also went on the road for that one series in which they took 1 out of 3. But the next couple of weeks are when I think we really start to learn where this team is, because from this series, they go on the road to 3 at Arizona, 3 at Los Angeles, 3 at San Francisco. Then they come home for 4 against Los Angeles, 2 against Houston, and then 3 on the road at Arizona. Like, their next sort of breather series is July 12th to the 14th, the first series after the All-Star break, and that's against the Reds, 3 games at home. So it's a this is a crucial stretch.
It's a huge stretch right now. And the fact they're playing their best baseball right now is great. And the one thing I've noticed that it seems like right now when teams come into Coors Field is that you're seeing a lot of post-game interviews with the opposing team where they interview the pitchers and they're like, yeah, you know, it's always a thing coming in here and it's always tough playing in here. You know, these opposing pitchers think that playing Coors Field is a daunting task, as it were. It's got that fence in the middle.
Hairs. No. Somebody tweeted at us yesterday. He gets ingrown hairs. H-A-I-H-S.
But no, but you're seeing that Coors Field's becoming more like it used to be with people coming in, with opposing pitchers coming in here. They're already thinking about Coors Field before they even make the start.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And that's a huge key because Coors Field should be an advantage for the Rockies. And, you know, they started 0-5 at Coors, which is, you know, not fun. But since then, they're what? They're 21-8 at good Coors Lord. Since starting 0-5?
Pretty good.
Like it should be that way with Coors Field. It should be like John Gray got two runs the first inning. Okay. Rockies went and scored 3 in the bottom of the first.
Yep.
Okay. They won 9-6. Okay.
Yeah.
Like you get down at Coors Field right now, you don't feel like the game is over. Not like it used to be, like in the beginning of the season, right, where we were worried about this team's offense.
Mm-hmm.
We're not worried about this team's offense anymore. Even on the road, they've been scoring runs.
Which is pretty incredible.
Not enough runs most of the time, but they've been scoring runs on the road. Like that's,
and everybody's come alive too. I mean,
it's to a point right now where the Rockies have been so hot at home that every time a team comes in here, they're like, ugh, Coors Field. And you hear it in the voices of the podcast, too.
Yes,
because the opposing broadcasts have been, I feel like, way more Coors-centric than even normal.
Mark Grant is rarely that way. We know last night, he was over
it kills
that.
Kruko and Kuiper. We know that it kills Steve Berthiaume. But like Orsillo and Mudcat last night were like, ugh, man. Like,
That was strange.
Because the Padres are playing pretty poorly right now. And when you get Coors Field in there, I don't know, man. That's what it should be.
Yeah. I agree. It's that was a weird broadcast last night because that's not super common for those two.
No, it's not. But whatever. I mean, I'm
it was fun though.
Yeah,
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
It's also, the best thing about it is both teams are playing at the same ballpark, and when the Cubs broadcast for that middle game, just could not shut up about Coors Field and the Cubs in that middle game, the one that they lost 10-3. They ended up with 6 hits. They had 3 hits, I think, going into the 9th inning. And it's like, you know that your team is playing at the same ballpark today, correct?
That's never how it works.
Never. Never seems to be the case. And I also noticed that when teams go to San Diego or go to San Francisco, the conversation is never when a ball dies at the track. Like, well, you know, Petco. How dare they build a place like this? So... it's good. That is true. I completely agree with that sentiment. You want that to rattle people.
Yeah.
You want that to get in people's heads. When they come to Coors Field, you want people to be miserable knowing that they have to play here. And I think the key to a Rockies pitching staff being good is what they have going on with the bullpen right now, where it's dudes who are just so cocky about, we all want to one-up each other. And we know that at times maybe it's not going to be easy here, but that doesn't really matter to us as long as we're getting the job done and we're getting wins. You have to have guys who don't care about their numbers, who don't care about what the appearance is of their season. Guys who just want to go out and execute and succeed and get wins, that's who you need on your staff.
Yeah, you're going to have a 4, you know, a 4 ERA. That's going to happen. Sorry, but that's how it's going to work at Coors Field. You're going to have a high opponent average. Sorry, that's how it's going to work all the time at Coors Field without fail. The Rockies bullpen right now, in terms of ERA as a unit, is the 3rd best in the National League. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
It's at 3.94 right now. Only the Giants and Reds, oddly enough, are better than the Rockies in terms of bullpen ERA. Now, they're not striking out a lot of guys, which is a problem, but they're not giving up home runs either. They've got the 3rd fewest home runs of any bullpen unit in the National League, which is also pretty surprising considering. Very low batting average on balls in play, too, which is that's nice. A 281, which is 3rd best in the National League. You know, it's the unit's starting to get those they're starting to get back together. I mean, Wade Davis is back. He had a home run last night, but he's back now. Scott Oberg doing really well. Then you got the the chunky boys, your Jairo Diaz, who's been a revelation. Carlos Estevez pitched pretty well. I don't know, man. The unit back there, they've figured out. Brian Shaw's been pretty good, save for a couple times where he gave up some runs where he'd been really overworked. Like, if you don't overwork Brian Shaw, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
That's what they've been doing this year. They've been overworking him. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And his, like, the weird thing about Brian Shaw, kind of like Jake McGee, they go out there and, like, the numbers are surprisingly okay when it feels like they really haven't pitched that well, especially for Jake McGee. Like, Jake McGee obviously has only pitched in 10 games this season. We've discussed many times, like, what is he doing on your roster if he's only going to – he's going to be the equivalent of, like, the 13th guy on an NBA roster right now.
Jake McGee has pitched in one game where the Rockies had a lead, and that lead was a 9-run lead at the time when he came into the game. Like, he's your $9 million man in the bullpen. He's pitched in 10 games. I know he was hurt. He's pitched in 10 games this year, and he's pitched in one where the Rockies had a lead. And it was a 9-run. Like, if you're that far in the doghouse, like, then why are you on the team?
Right. Making a whole bunch of money.
Like, and we literally forget he's on the team. That's how infrequently he pitches.
When he comes in, it's like, oh, yeah, him. Forgot about that. Yeah, it's Jake McGee. The 2017 season that Jake McGee had will always have that. When he put up a 3.61 ERA, struck out 58 batters and walked 18 and 57 in a third innings. We'll always have that. Aside from that, Jake McGee has been confounding, to say the least.
Hey.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know why he's here.
But their bullpen has been fantastic, and that has been a tremendous revelation. The thing that worries you right now is the rotation, and they're holding it together with spit and twigs and whatever they can. Peter Lambert has been amazing so far. It's also been two big league starts for Peter Lambert, so kind of have to pump the brakes on that. Jeff Hoffman, it looked like maybe was taking some steps forward. He had five really good innings against the Cubs. Then last time out, he was a disaster. Aside from, like, there are so few guys right now. John Gray, you feel like is going to keep – John Gray right now is a guy who is going to give you a chance to win. He's not going to go out, it feels, and give up 9 runs over 4 1/3. But he's also probably not going to go out and give up a run on 2 hits over 8.
He'll
keep you in games. And that's
it is
okay.
Funny, like, it sucks that his numbers haven't been, like, as good as I feel like they are. But I feel like he's pitching really, really well a lot of the time. And I do feel like last night, even given the 2 runs in the first, he had awesome stuff last night. I mean, he struck out 10 in the game. Like, his stuff was 97, 98 a lot of the time. His slider was nasty. And then you look at his final line and it's like, oh, like six innings, 10, right. 10 strikeouts, but like 4 runs. Like, you're like,
the fourth
okay.
player, I think, in franchise history, it's a franchise record, fourth player with double digit strikeouts and no walks in a start. That's pretty cool. But yeah, it was a strange one.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I want Gray to be like, you know, with like a 2.8 right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel that's how well he's been pitching.
Yeah,
it could just be relative
really
to what
does.
He's been doing last year too. But like, you know, because last year he was not good, obviously. But, you know, John Gray has looked the part this year, and I wish the numbers showed it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, John Gray right now has a 4.39 ERA through 14 starts. Herman Marquez, who is the unquestioned ace at this point, 4.19 through 15. So it's not tremendous difference. They've each got 6 wins, hashtag pitcher wins. But like those two guys right now, that is a good enough 1-2 punch. You know, even though they're not going back to back, that's doing enough for you at the moment.
Lambert's been incredible so far. We'll see how it happens when the league catches up to him, though. Getting the first two starts against the same team is really good to get that out of your way, because you looked really good when they should have made adjustments to you. You looked fantastic in your second start against them. So that's always a good sign. But yeah, there's no secret that the Rockies need a little bit more from their starting rotation. And I'm not sure they're going to get it anytime soon from AAA, from what it sounds like.
Yeah. Ryan Castellani. Remember when we were all excited about him?
Oh, I was talking about, you know.
Oh, and that
one. You know. Kyle Freeland.
Let's talk about him. Kyle Freeland went out for his second AAA start a couple of nights ago, and I honestly felt like I was going to be way more concerned about his outing than I ended up coming away with after rewatching some of it and reading some comments that he made with the Albuquerque Journal and talking with Josh Sushan, our buddy, the radio voice, the Isotopes, and the radio voice of the Oklahoma City Dodgers, Alex Friedman. They both said that, like, as that game went on, he definitely was markedly better. Yes, he gave up a grand slam early on in that game. He gave up a
rocket
dick shot monster home run to Will Smith in the first. That thing was murdered. It was after a walk and a strikeout. And then he picked off Connor Joe, the Dodgers prospect with two first names. So it's two outs, bases empty.
Yeah.
And then Will Smith just destroys a baseball. And I mean, it was middle, thigh high, right over the dish.
No hitch there.
And,
yeah.
He hit it over, if you've ever been to Isotopes Park, he hit it over the picnic area and the giant tent that covers the back half of the picnic area and into the parking lot beyond left field at Isotopes Park. Like, it was not a cheap one. But the grand slam that he gave up in the second inning was a joke. That was a 2019 PCL / Isotopes Park home run. It was to the opposite field. Zach Rex hit it. Barely got it to, I mean, really, I thought it was going to be barely deep enough to score a run when it got off the bat, and it just carried and carried and carried, and I think it scraped the wall on the way down. Like, it was a joke of a home run. But all of that being said, Kyle Freeland comes back in that game. He ends up, his final run that he allowed in the fourth inning was unearned. He got a 1-2-3 fifth, and then the sixth got ugly, and he walked a couple of guys and was lifted in the sixth.
Well, but he started in that sixth inning. He struck out the first two batters and got 0-2 right on the third, and then ended up walking that guy and walked another, and then was taken out.
He walked five in that game. Two of them he started 0-2. So I really didn't feel like it was as bad in the final analysis of it, and that's, you know, we talked about this the other, I think, two episodes ago. Like, the numbers in AAA, you're not going to be able to take much away from, because these are the things that the Rockies are going to be looking for, and these are the things that Kyle Freeland's going to be looking for. Like, how did you improve from inning one through inning X whenever your day was done?
Right.
How did your stuff look? How are you commanding your things? He made one really interesting comment to the Albuquerque Journal. He said, "We've eliminated my slider for now. Like, I'm not using the slider. I'm just trying to figure out how to command the fastball, a changeup, and the curveball." So getting him back to basics and whatever mechanical stuff they're working on, if that's part of the plan, I think that start showed a lot more progress than certainly what the final line seems like. I mean, there was, you know, an instant freak out on Twitter and elsewhere about 5 2/3, 8 hits, 9 runs. And that's somewhat understandable, but I do think
the final line does not look good.
Right. His ERA is 10.13 through two starts in AAA. Like, obviously there's a lot that he's still working on, but I think there were a lot more positives to get out of that than maybe what, certainly what initial blush would suggest about that start. And maybe a lot more positives than negatives overall.
I think even Nick Groak had a tweet last night about the team talking about Kyle Freeland. Said, "Freeland update from Triple ABQ, according to some club analysis, in short, stuff is fine, too many elevated pitches, needs to cut the walks, and he will need to adjust to the adjustment that MLB hitters made to lay off his inside fastball."
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
But yeah, it really is like we thought that, you know, we've said this on the podcast before, that we think, that feel like Kyle tried to make adjustments to MLB before the rest of the hitters made adjustments to him.
Right, right. He tried to get out ahead of the curve, but the curve had not started yet.
Yeah.
I think is sort of where he was.
He was still on the straightaway.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the next three outings are going to be narrative time for Kyle Freeland. Like, if he continues to go out and it's five innings and it's nine hits and he's given up a couple of homers each start, then I think you start getting a little bit worried about where he is. But if he builds on the last three innings in this last start, and next time out is, you know, it's the 2019 Pacific Coast League. It's not going to be, it's
going to
be stunning.
Steroids.
Right. It's going to be stunning if he goes out and goes seven innings and gives up two hits and no runs.
Yeah, but if he goes pre-humidor Coors.
Exactly. If he goes six and he gives up four runs on five hits, that's progress. You know,
yes.
I mean, that's the 2019 Pacific Coast League. It's unfortunate because it's difficult to evaluate, and especially from a fan point of view, like, you look at those things and think, oh man, he is really struggling. But that's not what the organization's looking at, and it's not what he's looking at.
Right.
So,
but yeah, it's super frustrating for us as fans.
Yeah.
Like, we're not happy about it.
And it's tough seeing a guy who everybody fell in love with struggle that badly. I mean, it's one thing if, you know, a guy goes through a stretch and you see that momentary frustration. But with Kyle Freeland, like, he just looked so lost. Yeah. And, you know, even at Albuquerque, even after the home runs, that's, you're struggling to keep it all together at that point, you know?
Yeah. And it sucks for him because as a pitcher, like, you know that confidence is a big thing for you. And no matter what level you are, confidence is huge. And when you go out there every day and you're getting your head kicked in, like, you were the fourth in the Cy Young voting in the National League last year.
Yeah.
And, like, deservedly so, you were that. And now you're in AAA giving up 8 runs in 5 innings, and you're just like, oh, my God. Like, it's – I can't even imagine what Kyle's feeling right now.
It is not fun. Not fun. I don't enjoy it. No. Not a big fan.
No. Do not want.
Do not want at all. But, you know, there are some things to don't like lock yourself away in your doomsday bunker just as of yet. Kyle Freeland, if we don't see Kyle Freeland back by the All-Star break and the numbers continue to look ugly in AAA, then, you know, get your bathtub full and you can climb into the bunker.
Your bathtub full, grab your toaster.
Peter Lambert, though. Peter Lambert, 2 starts against the Chicago Cubs, 12 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, 12 strikeouts, 3 walks, a whip of 0.83, an opponent's average of 167, and, like, a couple of wins against
looked
a good offense.
Really good.
Really, like, good.
And he has not looked overmatched. And like I said, he's facing the second best team in the National League. He's facing the Cubs. And it was not a cheapy Cubs lineup either time. Nope. It was Rizzo, it was Bryant, it was Baez, it was their real lineup. You're facing one at Wrigley and one at Coors, two of the most difficult places to pitch in all of baseball.
Yeah.
And you went and chubbed. And your changeup looked awesome. You were getting swings and misses on it. Great differential from your fastball to your changeup velocity. The fastball was looking good. He wasn't walking guys. He was right around the strike zone. He was working quickly. He was getting the guys behind him. It was basically a best case scenario for your first 2 major league starts for Peter Lambert.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And in a time when his team really needed it. I mean, if you get a guy up, and granted, it is only 2 starts and, you know,
the league will adjust
from here. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, he'll have some rough outings. That's the way it is when you're a rookie pitcher. But had they gone out, gotten Peter Lambert into the rotation, and all of a sudden he's just giving you what Tyler Anderson gave you or Jeff Hoffman or Chad Bettis, then because not only do you get swept in that series in Chicago, if that's the case, but you come back here, you lose the series against the Cubs at home, if that's the case. And I think what he has done just in 2 outings and giving a lift to the guys around him, that's huge.
Yeah, and you see, like, it helps the locker room, too, when he comes in and pitches well, and it picks up the guys. The guys go, oh, this kid can do it. Yeah, all right.
Right. Like, we'll go behind this kid any day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So that's been a really welcome development with them. The other things, the beanball war was the dumbest crap ever with the Cubs.
Yes.
Joe Madden, this is actually a Paul Klee tweet. Paul tweeted that he asked Bud Black, like, hey, what was the deal with them throwing at Nolan? And Bud Black said, I don't know, go ask Joe Madden. And so Paul did. And Paul said that Joe Madden's quote started with, like, in 1987, I was managing in Midland, Texas.
And you're like, okay, shut up, Joe.
Away we go.
Yeah.
And he explained some garbage about pitching inside and Coors and yada, yada, yada. But it's just like, Beanball War is the stupidest thing.
Yes.
Nobody's trying to hit Chris Bryant. Peter Lambert, first of all, the first pitch that hit Chris Bryant was a changeup. He's just trying to pitch inside. And if Chris Bryant didn't think he was Barry Bonds wearing, as Brian Kilpatrick put it, hockey goalie equipment and hanging out over the plate, maybe he doesn't get hit that often.
Like, Anthony Rizzo hangs out over the plate.
Right. If,
like,
you're not humping the plate, maybe you're not going to get drilled by people.
Yeah.
It's kind of the nature of the game. And then to come back and throw on Nolan as, I don't know, some kind of retribution for the fact that your dudes are trying to make sweet love to the plate. Like, it's kind of a, it's a chicken shit thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, whole camels. It's not entirely surprising that that's the organization that it came from.
Nope.
Yeah. Joe Maddon really went from being the most likable guy in baseball to
the most insufferable.
Yeah. He is an insufferable. He is a, he's the pretentious, we talked about this one time, I think just texting me and you. He's like the pretentious family friend that your parents have to hang out with that you have no idea why. Like, you just hate him, but he's always over for family stuff. You're like, what do you see in this guy to be friends with him? That's Joe Maddon.
Yeah,
like, you give him a nice bottle of wine and he goes, oh, I guess we can maybe use this like once we're a few bottles in.
Yeah, if you've seen, like, I Think You Should Leave on Netflix, like, if you've seen that, the episode where where they're at the party playing charades with the old guy who keeps putting in all those like old celebrities from like the Colgate like comedy hour. Yeah,
that's Joe Maddon.
That's Joe Maddon. Like burning his mouth on room temperature gazpacho. That's Joe
when
Maddon.
You're expecting something to be ice cold and it comes out at room temperature,
it feels like it's burning.
That is Joe Maddon. He is that guy.
Or he is
embarrassed me.
He's Bradley Whitford from Get Out.
From Get Out. Yeah.
I would vote for Obama for a third term.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Maddon. So I don't know. Like, I don't really have a whole lot on that topic because I think it's stupid. Beanball War is the dumbest thing. You want to fight each other? Just fight each other. Don't throw baseballs at each other. What are we, in sixth grade? Come on.
Yeah.
Grow up.
Are we? Are we in sixth grade?
I wish. Sixth grade was all right. Sixth grade was okay. I feel like it was a good stretch of time, sixth grade. It was 96. The Avs won the cup.
Yeah.
Nebraska football just won back-to-back national championships.
Yeah, I didn't care about that, obviously.
Broncos were going to the Super Bowl the next 2 years.
That's true.
Pretty good time. Rockies had just come off of a wild card berth.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. And then what happened? Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess there's not a ton else going on. The Ask PDPs, I believe we had one that
we got some nice emails, apparently.
Yeah, we did. I
actually checked the email account.
I checked our email account for some reason, and we got some good ones. One of them from October, which is from Ian Smith, who just wanted to pass along his thanks for doing the show. He lives in Iowa. And said, quote, there's hardly any baseball talk at all except for bandwagon cards and Cubs fans jawing at each other.
I was the worst place ever to be a baseball fan.
Yeah, it is.
You blacked
out
with
like
nine different teams.
The setting of Field of Dreams, and you literally cannot watch anybody on their major league Fields of Dreams.
No. No, you cannot.
It's quite weak. We also got an email from our pal Ryan Tarletsky, who evidently changed his Twitter password one night and does not know how to get back into it. It said, it just happens to be linked to my old work email and work phone, and now I am forever banished from the Twitterverse, secretly a blessing in disguise. I wish that would happen.
That's fair, but like, get a new account, dude. Like,
yeah, come back. We miss you. Yes. But Ryan asks us this question. All sports are trend followers. Do you think the two-way player trend might be making a comeback, or do you think good-hitting pitchers like Marquez, Mad Bum, Syndergaard might encourage National League teams to scout and develop better-hitting pitchers? Seems like such a huge advantage anytime the Rockies get offensive production from Marquez.
Yeah, you're seeing like Brendan McKay and Hunter
Brendan
Green.
Brendan McKay,
guys
Green.
Were,
right.
I mean, obviously Shohei Ohtani. I mean,
yeah. This does seem to be, I think, a burgeoning trend. I don't know if it's enough that we can call it a trend now, but I think the fact that major league organizations are open to letting guys do this is really cool.
I do. It's fine because like a lot of guys do it in college anyway.
Right.
But
Brendan McKay is the perfect example of that.
Yeah. Like I personally don't see it at all becoming a thing in major league baseball because
the reason I don't think it will,
it's so hard to be able to do both at a high level.
Yeah.
We saw with Shohei Ohtani last year. When he focused on one or the other, he was outstanding. He hit for the cycle last night. Like,
yeah,
that home run he hit last night was an absolute laser beam. Like to left center, like a 19-degree launch angle. Like it was just a laundry rope. That's all it was. And it reached the first row of seats. Like it didn't get off the ground. It was
after a power outage, by the way. Yeah. At the
that was before the power outage, actually.
Oh, it was before the power outage. Oh boy. That place seems so cool.
Can't wait till they host the World Series this year.
But, I mean, he right now can't pitch, so he's focusing on being an offensive player. And
he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's the reason why I don't think it'll become a trend is the universal DH will wipe it out if that comes in short order. But even more than that, we've discussed this. The reason why, and I'm a National League fan. I've been a National League fan obviously since 1993, and I think the pitcher should hit because I think the DH addressed an issue that is no longer an issue in Major League Baseball. The fact that the DH was created and now pervades every level of amateur ball is why it's never going to go away. The bigger reason than that is it'll never go away because you'd be eliminating 15 high paying jobs from the Major League Baseball Players Association. And that's never going to happen. But if pitchers had to hit at every level, if there was no designated hitter and pitchers had to hit growing up and in high school and in college and throughout the minor leagues, then I think pitchers would probably be fine. Like, these guys are all world-class athletes. Are they going to hit? Are we going to have Babe Ruths? No. But, like, I think had the designated hitter never been conceived, then we'd probably be in an era where pitchers hitting was just fine and it wouldn't really be a topic of discussion. Now, granted, obviously the DH was created because pitchers weren't really that great of hitters anyway, but baseball lasted in a professional sense for almost 100 years without the designated hitter and it was fine. But the thing is, it's never going away because money, you know. Unfortunately, I think the two-way player thing, if it turned into a larger trend, would be really cool. I just don't think it's going to be that way. Shohei Ohtani, by the way, in 31 games since he returned as a DH, is slashing .281, .350, .512.
He's eight bombs. He's walking, striking out a little bit, but like he's
walking here.
You know, he's got an .863 OPS. Like,
yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Tonight the Rockies go against the Padres for the second game of this four-game series. Cal Quantrill, a Canadian who went to Stanford, gets the nod for San Diego.
Paul's kid,
opposite one Jeff Hoffman. Quantrill 1-2, 4.85 ERA. Hoffman 1-3, 8.06.
But we've seen good things from Jeff Hoffman the last few starts. And it's like,
I want to see good things
like with John Gray. Like, you see it, you're like, oh, he pitched pretty well in the final line. You're like, oh, wait, that sucks.
Yeah. It's not. It's a piece of artwork that you think like, oh man, this is gonna turn out beautifully, and then somebody just grabs a paint can and throws shit all over it.
Yeah.
And at the end, you're like, eh, well, that didn't really turn out so great. Hoffman has, you know, and Bud Black said this in an interview with MLB Network Radio the other day. He said, like, you can't deny his arm. Like, we like him because the talent is so obviously there.
Agreed.
But it's just not, it's not easy to put it all together. He'll get another crack tonight. And, you know, the Padres are a strange lineup that it feels like you can dominate on certain nights. Padres, by the way, now are 0-9 in games that Austin Allen starts behind the plate, which I find kind of comical. But on other nights, it feels like they can erupt. Like, they've got some guys who are scary when they get it going. But I don't know. Tonight is going to be fun for a different reason. And if you listen to this and if you're at Coors Field tonight, hit us up. Have you seen @BaseballBrit on Twitter?
Yes.
So there is a gentleman who you can follow on the tweets, @BaseballBrit. And he's staying with me for the next two nights. We're going to hang out. We're going to go check some baseball games out of Coors Field. His story is a good one in that he is traveling the United States and, you know, doing Joey Mellows, by the way, is his name. He's just doing the baseball thing for the summer. And he's a British guy. He, I believe, and I got to get this story fully nailed down, but I'm pretty sure that he was teaching English in Korea and kind of fell in love with baseball that way. He came over here last year and traveled around and saw some baseball, and then he decided, like, all right, 2019, that's my year. I'm gonna do it. I'm just gonna travel the country and watch baseball. So a couple of nights ago, he was in Amarillo, Texas, watching the Padres AA team. Brand new ballpark.
The Sod
there.
Poodles.
The Sod Poodles. Last night he was at Isotopes Park. I think Josh Sushan had him on the pregame show for the Isotopes. And tonight he is arriving here. We're going to the game, and you know, hopefully he's a good luck charm. It'll be cool.
Yeah. You can always use more good luck charms for the Rockies.
Yeah. It's never a thing you'll turn down.
Nope.
But yeah, you gotta go. You got a work phone call.
I do.
I gotta clean my house because I've got somebody staying with me, which like rarely happens. So, you know, yeah. Trying to get those things done, be an adult.
I gave Zoe a peanut butter treat, which she usually hates.
Really?
She's like peanut butter. She's like the one dog in the world that's like peanut butter.
Oh, yeah, I like and, it. If Liget hears me open the peanut butter thing, if she's in my room and I open it in the kitchen, she bolts out.
Yeah, no, and there's like the PetSmart we used to go to is closing now, which super sucks for us. It was on the west side. It was like great, and now it's all terrible. But they were like selling all their stuff, like, you know, liquidation sale. So we got some treats, and I didn't realize they were peanut butter, and I brought them back, and I was like, damn it, what are we gonna do with all these? And I gave them to her, like, you want to try it? And her eyes lit up, and she ran outside and like sprinted out and just like sat in there for an hour and ate it. And I was like, oh,
nice.
Okay.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, hey,
palate is evolving.
Good for us. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That's fantastic.
And now she's just gonna sleep because she's all peanut buttered out. She's drunk off peanut butter.
That's what happens. I get that way with peanut butter.
Yeah. Well, anyway, go Rockies.
All right. All right, go Rockies. Yeah, if you're there tonight, hit us up. Let us know. And hopefully we'll get to say hello. That'll do it. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week. Love you. Bye.